Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome along to Beyond Bitcoin. My name is Derek Graham. I'm the CEO of Portal Asset Management. And as always, here with me today is my friend and colleague, Nitin Gala.
Thanks, Derek. My name is Nitin, and I serve as Director of Financial Sciences and Digital Asset at IBM. I also serve as CTO for Portal Asset Management. And looking forward to another exciting week where we just packed with news. So
every week is. There's no quiet week in the world of crypto. So I thought I might take a helicopter view of what's happened this week in regards to capitalization and movements of markets, et cetera. And then, of course, we'll talk about the very obvious and very large elephant that's now come out of the room in a moment. So just quickly, of course, we're a conversation between two gents that have been in this space for a while and enjoy the space thoroughly. We're not providing financial advice. Okay, so this week, the total capitalization of the crypto markets is sitting at $2.54 trillion. That's up $203 billion since we spoke last week. And that's an extraordinary amount of money. There's an old saying, isn't there, Nitin? A billion here, a billion there. Sooner or later, you're going to be talking about real money. And I think clearly we're seeing that with the regulators and the administrators around the world, that we are now starting to become relevant at north of $2 trillion of capitalization. And so I just give you a top 10 tokens just so we can see them and maybe what the hell they are. So obviously Bitcoin's sitting up there. It's currently 47.37% of the capitalization of the marketplace because Bitcoin's had a big run in price in the last week, possibly in the lead up to the elephant in the room we're going to talk about shortly. Ethereum, which is a layer one protocol, is sitting at 17.94%. Binance, which is tradable token, is at 3.8%. Cardano is a layer one. Tether is a stable coin. Ripple is another payment token. Solana is a layer one. Polkadot is a layer one. Dogecoin is, well, really, it's a meme coin, isn't it?
It is a meme coin.
It's a meme coin. And the last one's, US dollar stable coin again. So if you take those two stable coins out, what we are seeing is that the picks and shovels of this industry, aren't they, those top 10 tokens?
It is. They're all layer ones, as you have rightly noted, except XRP. XRP is an application layer. And what's interesting about that statistics, both in terms of the top layers, is that the industry is still evolving. There is still a lot of runway because layer ones are the ones that support all the other applications that are built on top. So to me, it's very exciting that at $2.5 trillion, which is my number was stuck at 2.3 for the longest time, and I'm really glad to see it go up by a few billion, which is certainly exciting and partly because of Bitcoin, but also a lot of stuff has happened. And Derek, as we were discussing earlier, there's no dearth of excitement in this space. We begin to see thematic weeks. Every week, dominant news emerges. We started out with the China ban week when we talked about China ban all week long. And then exactly. We had Gary Gensler week when Gary Gensler talked about regulation. And this week is the ETF week. So let's talk about ETF.
Exactly. So ProShares Bitcoin Strategy Exchange Traded Fund, or ETF, traded a volume of nearly $1 billion in its first day. And Nitin, you've just looked at the trading in its first couple of hours, haven't you? And as I understand it, it nearly did some $500 million in the first couple of hours today. So what we're seeing is that it's come alive. So, after a long, arduous journey to get here, the SEC has allowed the trading of an ETF futures market on the CME, or the Chicago's Metals Exchange. And we've got to go back all the way to 2013 when the Winklevoss brothers proposed an ETF to the SEC and to the exchanges and was profoundly and clearly denied. Many have followed since to do that, and each one of them has been pushed back. 2 days ago, what we've seen is finally there's been an ETF that's arrived. However, it's an exchange-traded fund on simply the derivative of futures. So why do we have a futures trading fund and not an ETF with the direct underlying? Because after all, Bitcoin is highly liquid.
True. I think it's partly because of the narrative that that SEC chair Gary Gensler had in terms of his willingness to approve something that's a regulated industry from a futures end, which is what's governed by CFTC, you know, in the US. And I think CFTC or Commodities and Future Trading Commission has governed the fact that futures market is regulated. They look into you know, they look into some of the metrics, both in terms of how these trading are done. It's a regulated space. It's well understood by the industry. And Gary Gensler indicated that any instrument or any ETF as a financial product that rides upon these future contracts is something would be acceptable. And I think market took that narrative. And, you know, over time, there have been many attempts, as you mentioned, both from Gary, you know, Winklevoss Brothers, or Winklewise, and then by Bitwise, and then Grayscale, and then you had, you know, a bunch of these sort of, you know, various entities who have looked into this from perspective of issuing, you know, an ETF. And we finally had the moment, though I do question the excitement. And I'll pause there for a minute, Derek, to get your perspective that you're still not holding on to the underlying asset. It is still a bet. It is still a futures contract, which is, you know, a rather speculative asset. And, you know, I'll stop at that and get your thoughts, because I think we need to dissect this a little bit more in terms of what does it mean? Is it purely for institutional investors? How does it affect me and you and our sort of constituents that we are trying to address?
Well, I think clearly it's for institutional investors. Trading futures on the CME is something you can't sign up to an account as an individual in an easy form. We've done that as a fund, and it was costing us $5,000 US a month to sign up to the CME and be able to access the futures. That's very expensive. So you've got to be an institutional investor to want to be able to pay those sort of numbers. That's one thing. And the other thing is, I just think the industry is still groaning. It's getting dragged towards having to acknowledge that cryptocurrencies and digital assets are playing a major role. And there are so many examples of this. I mean, by example, in Australia, there's an interesting thing that BetaShares is set to launch a crypto-focused equities exchange traded fund on the Australian Securities Exchange, overcoming the exchange's crypto reluctance, bless them, that has been several local businesses that have listed overseas in recent months, relating to the fact that this ETF trades listed stocks around the world that have some degree of exposure to cryptocurrencies. Whether they happen to be big mining companies, or whether they happen to be developers, or whether they happen to have an exposure because, you know, like microsystems, because they simply have a large amount of Bitcoin in their treasury. It's what we would call in Australia, it's called a Clayton's offering. Clayton's is a famous non-alcoholic whiskey, and it had a brilliant ad that says, and it says, it's the whiskey I'm drinking when I'm not really drinking a whiskey. And the ad was huge and the whiskey failed, but it became a lexicon statement all the way through Australia's history. This is a Clayton's ETF, and people are buying this ETF because we're still seeing, with the Australian Stock Exchange and these other siloed stock exchanges around the world, what appears to be just a great reluctance to acknowledge digital assets. And I think the impact that they're going to have on centralized siloed exchanges. That's my thought. They would argue the proposition that there isn't a lot of price discovery, the market's still manipulated, it's not regulated enough. All of these will be the reasons they argue it. But I think as human beings, they still find this market something that they can't control, and they're not overly happy about it. That's my rant. That's my view on it.
So one thing on this, right? So I question two things. I've always questioned in a way to question the fact that, you know, we begin to apply the same lens of our instruments and the way we regulate and measure these instruments and investment, you know, in these instruments from traditional lens. And essentially with blockchain and Bitcoin and crypto industries trying to revolutionize the way we have done this, from capital formation to how we invest and how we take advantage of the markets that the new industry presents to us. So the question then becomes, by owning Tesla, MicroStrategy, Twitter, and most recently, you know, crypto tracer analysis company called Chain Analysis, have all made a commitment to add Bitcoins to his corporate balance sheet, right? And a small company like, for example, Chain Analysis, which was just born about a decade ago, which I've seen it sort of grow into a pretty dominant market player from you know, analyzing blockchain networks. It's a $4.2 billion software company. And so if I look at this, should I not be owning MicroStrategies and Twitter and Chain Analysis of the World, which gives me sort of de facto ETFs because they have substantial amount of ETFs in that, as opposed to going after futures-based contract ETFs? And I think if you look at 3IQ in Canada, which came out 3 years back, they actually own the underlying assets. They actually have custody of underlying assets. So I think US being the largest capital market in the world, opening up its doors, I think it gives a natural advantage to the investment ecosystem. These are the hedge funds and these are the mutual funds and the treasury of many of the entities, you know, like pension funds, give them an avenue to invest in this new asset class. But there is also an element of cost associated with it. Suddenly you have the same set of intermediaries. So we haven't really done anything, if you ask me. You're simply, you know, you have a futures contract that's been socialized. And I don't think we have solved anything with it. It's a first step, nonetheless. It certainly creates awareness. But I would be more excited, Derek, if we could do this in what you have been talking about for the longest time, is can we not take these, you know, these spot ETFs, which is basically backed by the underlying asset, with custody underlying asset, and tokenize that offering, which gives them an indirect access and not have to deal with some of the risks of self-custodying these things. And that will, in my opinion, will be the next step. It'll be super exciting to see that, I think.
Yeah, look, I agree. And, you know, for people that are listening here that are thinking, you know, am I invested, you know, if they are invested in this industry or are they going to invest in this space? What's interesting about this is that as we discuss this flux, these periods of indecision, the regulations not coming to fruition fast enough or possibly coming to fruition in a suggested aggressive way, all of these frankly are opportunities in this industry. It's young, it's volatile. This is when we believe the industry is growing and when we believe there's the greatest opportunity to make asymmetric returns on risk. And so as we thoroughly enjoy the kind of machinations and politics and gossip that goes on this industry and its interface with traditional industries, this is causing volatility to the marketplace. And this volatility in the marketplace for investors and traders is a great thing. Now, for those that want to control the space and want to regulate the space, and I'm not against regulations, I've often said it just has to be done with some wisdom. 1934 regulations aren't wisdom. They're bringing a 1934 Cadillac into a race and it's not the right car. And so with the arrival of these regulations occurring, we'll start seeing the larger institutions come into the space. And then we'll start seeing very thorough and substantial capitalization in. But the winding journey there is one where people are confronted with knowledge or the requirement to get new knowledge, the requirement to trade using wallets, the requirement to get open accounts on exchanges they're not used to. These are things that traditional investors aren't comfortable doing. They like going to their Bloomberg screen if they're a large trader, or they like going to their E-Trade screen or their Commonwealth Bank screen or the many, many others that are there and trade exchange traded items. And this is why these offerings are there, why this potpourri of companies that have some associated with crypto are called an ETF and people are showing interest to invest in that ETF. And I would argue, by the way, that that's just because they just don't understand the step across. They're just, that is a segue or a intermediary technology or solution to this. A better solution to this is immerse yourself in the space, start to understand how it works, open a wallet, open an account using an exchange and start trading in it. And you all of a sudden decide, well, why would I buy a futures ETF? Why would I buy a bundle of companies which frankly have such diverse strategies into the space, making it uncontrollable as to how that might reflect in value? So yeah, look, we're always in this process of segueing or process of technology growth. It's interim technology growth that's happening in the space. And that's why this is a nice step. Maybe Nitin, we might call this a baby step. What do you think?
No, I think, again, anything which has passed some regulatory test and the industry is accepting, it's a positive for the industry, whether it's a futures contract. And eventually, when the asset class becomes more accepting, the efforts of many of the industry pioneers, such as Grayscale and Bitwise, if you remember Bitwise, almost about 8 years back, presented a good 200-page deck, which I went through. I devoured it in terms of the amount of data they presented, in terms of the lack of market data and what they're trying to do to bring that market data. And ETFs will certainly normalize that entire curve. I think is all great effort in bringing this industry to its first-class status. And then eventually, when these asset classes come to the space, that also, you know, one interesting thing, you know, Derek, that I've learned, again, working with some of the pension funds around the world, is that the reason why pension funds are reluctant in investing in this space is because of market depth. And these instruments certainly provide the diversity as well as the options around the market depth, which attracts more capital. And it's always a great thing if we are, if we have bet our careers and our futures in this industry, is that anything around that is certainly a great step in normalizing the industry trends. So that's certainly positive, welcome news, I think.
Very true. And you know, for those that are investing in an ETF related to exchange, stock exchange traded companies, that is a step. It's a step to starting to look at the space. It's a step to starting to understand what those companies do. There's a reasonable chance that their ETF will perform very well. And that also might tickle their interest because they're starting to get better returns than the somewhat legacy industries that are sitting there on the traditional siloed exchanges as it is. So you're absolutely right. This is a good step in that right direction. Along the way, there are some regulators and there are some senators that might not like some of these things because of a variety of reasons. One of them was going to be that there's a lack of control. The other one is that there's a challenge to their existing system and its inefficiencies, particularly around global monetary policy. But currently, the great ones that are pushing back on this appear to be the Democrats, which is surprising because they're the progressive party, clearly. And here they are not wanting to progress. So the discussion then next step would be come towards Facebook's Diem and its wallet. So I would argue that Democrats don't want carpe diem. They no seizing the day today. They don't like the idea of the Novi wallet, and they don't like the idea of the Diem token. So lawmakers have said that they cannot trust Facebook in launching a new digital currency. And on Tuesday, the US senators ordered Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg to immediately discontinue the Novi wallet and commit that you will not bring Diem to the market, which is an extraordinary statement. But maybe partly here's the reason why. There are 1.79 billion users of Facebook, and it's the third most visited website in the world. Possibly more users of Facebook than there are users of the US dollar, in which case, what an incredibly powerful platform Facebook would be. Or no, let's put it this way. How powerful would Diem be if it became used by 1.79 billion users and therefore becomes a default currency of very large size? That must be playing on their mind when they're looking at this and saying, no carpe diem here, please.
So let me add to two more play on words there. Carpe diem and diem, that makes sense. But what's interesting about Novi means two things. One is that it means something new in Yugoslavian and Spanish, and also means the gift of God from the Indonesian origin. And so I believe if anybody who's saying no to Novi, for example, they're not interested in anything new, which means they're fine in the antiquated ways of doing things. And it's a gift of God, which means that you should be accepting anything that comes along the way. But that aside, let me dissect this a little bit more, Derek, because I think it's important. So, I think this journey from Libra that became Diem, that morphed into other areas of how it should be implemented, from basket currencies to just a US dollar, is drastic simplification of what it used to be. So that's a great thing from both. And I think Facebook has more trust issues than it's anything to do with money. only because it's lost so much trust of public around the world, as well as the, you know, as well as the regulators and the harm they have done in spreading misinformation. So I think that's a bigger underlying element behind it than currency itself. But what's interesting is this, right? The Diem was it was actually a project that emerged in MIT, and some of those folks moved into this, in this, into the Libra project, because it is meant to change the world in truly moving money as we move our text. I believe for me to send money as I WhatsApp you, for example, and connect the endpoints to your bank accounts, and that way drastically simplify moving money around the world. The way they went about was interesting, but Diem was the currency and Novi was the wallet. So there's a difference between the two. And I think if you look at Diem, there were two news that happened this month. In fact, one happened this morning that that UPaxos, which is a stable coin early on, was backed by gold, but now have its own stable coin backed by USD. Paxos says, you know, we will, Novi will accept Novi as a wallet, which is by Facebook, which is, you know, you need a money service broker license in 50 states to move money in the US, and Facebook has obtained that. So now they have wallets. And if you have a Novi wallet, at least planned for future, you should be able to accept USDP, which is the Paxos stablecoin, in that wallet as one of the instrument. So let's distinguish between Novi as a wallet and other instrument that could sit in a wallet. Today, you only have one instrument, which is USDP. Diem is still alive, by the way. So Diem is, you know, there's a company called Silvergate, a bank called Silvergate, which is one of the de novo banks, which was formed to serve the crypto industry, has agreed to issue Diem as an instrument. So the question then becomes, what's next? If I have a wallet, and just like any other wallet, the wallet is able to accept a tokenized fiat or tokenized dollar, then what else can it hold on to it? And that, that conversation is a bit more interesting.
Yes.
But I'll pause at that, because there are a lot of possibilities. I'd love to get your thoughts in terms of what is the true carpe diem for us as we the people, and how do we embrace something new in a meaningful way and convince the regulators and legislators to get on board with something that's new and seize the day?
Well, this is truly, it's all just fear of the unknown, isn't it? And the regulators just aren't sure about giving away power, and regulators don't like to give away power. And providing just the thought of being able to provide a company like Facebook, with which has got such a global reach, with a wallet and people starting to transact through it, I'd say a great fear to them. From our point of view, however, you know, it may well be that we think Novi and Diem is just a very good idea delivered by a company that's not necessarily considered a very good company. And that probably is the biggest issue. And that's about brand damage, and it's about trust, as you say. So that has to be sorted through progressively. But what's interesting is the whole conversation we've had today from start to finish has been about the magnitude of the size of this market growing, and then two very large on-ramps to the market, because they are on-ramps at the end of the day. Although you might be trading a CME futures contract and really be a number of steps away from Bitcoin, you're starting to trade Bitcoin. And so these large traders around the world are starting to trade Bitcoin in their own way. And the provision of Novi and the potential of Diem that's coming, that means that there's more going into this on-ramp. And we've talked about on-ramps time and time again. I can't stop talking about on-ramps. And the reason why is that every time PayPal says they want to do something with digital assets, Visa and MasterCard are talking about digital assets. More banks come on board with digital assets like Silvergate and various other banks that are, you know, onboarding digital assets. What we're seeing is we're just seeing a constant creation of on-ramps, because every one of these things gets to a point where people go, oh, this is interesting. So if I've got this stable coin that I've decided just to use to send around the world because it's much better than using the bank, I can also swap this stable coin for this kind of token here. And that gives me access to these services or access to these opportunities. Nitin, these are just all on-ramps, and they're just all signs, I think. What do you think, that the industry is still growing at a solid pace?
No, I'll tell you this, a few things that went unnoticed. There's a company called NYDIG, well-known institutional Bitcoin management from a firm popular on Wall Street, which has enabled you know, banks like US Bank and JPMs to be able to provide holding on Bitcoins, and also provide services to payment service providers. The the question of on-ramp is absolutely that, that, you know, you have these firms who are providing the safeguarding and custody of these Bitcoins and providing accessibility to traditional yes. bank holders, like you don't need to deal with wallets and everything else, removing complexity, that's an on-ramp too. And so the way I'm looking at this is, let's say something like Novi or any other wallet type becomes a popular, you know, non-custodial element, then if the bank can allow me to hold Bitcoins and the same bank can allow me to hold the Paxos or USDC or USDT or any other, these are all on-ramps, which
yes.
expands the network. Suddenly now I'm including more and more people coming on to this, you know, use of this technology. And eventually you'll begin to see that regulation, you know, barring regulation, barring some of the other elements, the technology itself will take over to say, let's make this all easier. That if you do have to have this wallet in any part of the world, the transfer becomes a lot simpler, no matter who you're banking with. And that's essentially building the payment network and transaction network that allows us to move. And if I can move a token that represents dollar, can I not move a token that represents a security and a token that represents a car and NFTs? And so the possibilities are immense because of these on-ramps, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And Ted, the other thing is that, of course, all this creates momentum in the space. And momentum then is very hard to swim against. And look at what's happened with our friend Jamie Dimon, of course. And we mentioned it last week, and we love Jamie Dimon stepping up and making special comments about Bitcoin, et cetera. And he said Bitcoin was worthless, et cetera. Now, what was intriguing is a few years ago when he stepped up and said that, the market tanked and it took a couple of weeks for it to cover. This time he stepped up and said that, and the market did nothing. It just kept on plowing forward. Well, all of a sudden, Jamie Dimon's Mr. Irrelevant in this space. What's intriguing is that Berkshire Hathaway, that have got an impeccable track record and are always admired, and Warren Buffett is you know, as a god status in traditional industry, and he's made a number of statements that he thinks Bitcoin is rat poison times two. He's irrelevant in this space. And that's what right. we're seeing is culturally, these icons from the old world aren't relevant in this space. The spokesmen in this space are starting to become different people with different views, and they have a different vision of the future. And those old icons are now no longer having an impact on the value of the capitalization of the space in a way that they used to, because this space now has a lot of momentum. What do you reckon?
Yeah, no, I think it's more resilient, and we have forgotten our friend Elon Musk. So I think that, you know, the market in general, like early days, especially in the traditional stocks and securities, someone like Warren Buffett could move the markets. Someone like Jamie Dimon could move markets. And they were very careful, including the Fed chair. I mean, any indication of interest rates here and there would certainly indicate the market movement. And I think we see a new resilient class, an asset class that is driven by, you know, things like RSI and some of the newer metrics that are being born in terms of relative strength index, in terms of where does the whole notion of price and value going with these tokens. And I think that to me is, again, it's an emergence of a whole new set of rules by which we engage. And it's not just a few individuals and the asymmetry of information that gave them a natural advantage. I think this is all telling. I'm not saying that blockchain and the assets that are blockchain are perfect today, but it's reaching to a point that is much more transparent than our existing financial system, as we discussed last time. And that trend will continue to refine and create new metrics, create new information, create new leaders, and create new communities. So yes, I think yes. in this case, it's not an individual person, it's a community's voice that matter yep. more than, let's say, Warren Buffett or Jamie Dimon per se.
It's so true. And also this plays well into our theme over the last few weeks, which is our solid belief. And this is not just the disintermediation of banks and institutions, which we have no personal vendetta against. We just simply realize that there's inefficiencies and there's, you know, sure. there can be corruptions with power. It's not just the disintermediation of the banks. It's the democratization of wealth to this medium, you know, middle class and frankly, you know, unbanked of the world that is going hopefully to see this disintermediation of wealth itself. And what a great example of the inability to the extremely wealthy to adapt to a new space, when you hear Jamie Dimon saying it's worthless and Warren Buffett saying it's rat poison, because they are the extreme wealth of the existing system and they're not adapting to it. And that plays well into this theory that this may be the disintermediation of the next 150 years cycle of wealth, this creation of digital assets and all the business models that go with it. So like on that note, I'd like to think that this last week has been very good in the future of crypto assets and digital assets. And not every week is great. We have some real setbacks in the week. But one thing that we do have is there's always news, because this space operates in dog years. So 1 week is like 9 weeks in the normal world. So thanks very much, of course, for joining us again, Nitin, and shooting the breeze with me on what's happened during the week. Those that are out there listening, please feel free to write to us or communicate with us via LinkedIn. And we look forward to seeing you next week again for Beyond Bitcoin. Bye for now.
See you all next week with hopefully a new trend, Derek.
Definitely new trend, Nitin. Good on you.
Bye, guys. Stay safe.